Okay, welcome to another Storage Unpacked podcast. And today we're going to talk about disaggregation in storage architectures. I've got Martin and I've got Gavin. Hi, guys.
Hi, Chris.
Hello.
How are we doing?
Good. Very good.
Been a little while, a little bit of a summer break, and now we're back to it.
And we're also using new software, so hopefully we'll be much clearer as well after several issues.
Yeah, let's hope so. Recording has been a bit of a problem, which I guess is part of the reason for the gap too. So let me just set a little bit of a background to this. We are moving towards the use of NVMe drives in flash, which promise a lot more performance than traditional SATA drives. We'll come back to that in a moment. And as a result, we're starting to see some vendors changing their architectures and bringing out what we might call disaggregated architectures in storage arrays. And by that, we mean rather than having everything central, we're actually making it. We're splitting the control and the data planes out. We'll go into a bit more detail about what that really means in a second. So the question is this relevant? Does it really matter? And if it does, what benefits can we see coming up from this in the future? Shall I start us off by talking about the legacy architectures, if we want to call it legacy, and we'll see how we go from there?
Yep, sure.
Okay, so let's just think about where we are today in terms of our architectures. And even looking at some of the newer technologies that we think are new, they still use that dual controller or multi-controller scale-out architectures where we have maybe multiple nodes or a couple of controllers and disk shelves, and effectively all of our I/O goes through that controller and out front end ports, either network or fiber channel, out to a host. Very classic design that we've seen being very successful for a lot of years.
Yep, very much so, yep.
So within those architectures, there's a bottleneck, clearly. There's a bottleneck in the sense that everything you do has to go through that controller or those controllers, and therefore there's a limitation on your throughput based on the number of processors that can be in those devices. So obviously with modern Xeon processors, they're very fast, and we've got PCIe Express, which is very fast. But even so, it's still possible to max out flash drives or not be able to use the capacity of those flash drives. And as a result, we're seeing people bring architectures to the market that are trying to avoid that. So first of all, do we think this is a problem that people are likely to care about? Do we think it's a problem in the industry? And do we think that it's something that is going to be very popular in the short term?
Well, I think it's a problem which is going to be a corner case for a lot of people. We're not necessarily seeing people demanding more extreme IOPS and latency. With the people, unless you're within financial services or anything which has got some high-speed real-time analytics. So for most people, I don't think they're going to care. But I think most people who care are going to care an awful lot. I'm probably willing to pay quite a lot for it.
That's it. It's a shifting of the bottleneck. You look at a number of designs that have been done in storage over years, they're about dealing with a bottleneck for those it's relevant. So the original bottleneck, as we all know, was hard disks. So people like EMC come along and designed Symmetrics boxes that were all about removing the bottleneck of the hard disk. Now we've solved that problem to an extreme with the NVMe, the bottlenecks in the controller. But for some people, that's not a problem because it provides way more performance than they ever need. But as Martin said, there are applications where latency and IOPS are very sensitive. Also bandwidth. I've seen NVMe used a lot of the times where people want extremely wide bandwidth as well, which is something it can provide. But again, it's different ways to solve a problem. But it comes back to my old mantra is, what's the problem you're trying to solve in doing this? And are you doing it just for the sake of it? Or are you doing it because you have a business problem?
I'll play devil's advocate a little bit. So if I'm going to move to NVMe and I'm going to pay a premium to move to an architecture, should I be really happy if, for example, I'll pick on Pure, but I'm not picking on them particularly. We could pick on, say, Tedjar, because they've just done NVMe as a platform as well. But should I really be happy with the fact that I've paid a premium for an NVMe-based system? Yeah, I might only see 10 or 15, maybe 20% performance increase. Is that reasonable to expect?
Well, it's the fact of whether it's NVMe or not is irrelevant. If you're paying a huge amount of money for a 10% performance improvement, then you've probably just been mugged, quite frankly.
And do you care? I mean, yet again, it comes down, Chris, it comes down to use case again. I mean, you may have paid more money than you needed to do to get this performance increase, but you probably didn't need it. So if your performance is there and you can't use it, it's not going to buy you anything. Why should you care? You've just been a bit of a mug and you've overpaid for something.
But everybody wanted a million IOPS, didn't they? I thought everybody wanted
that was
a million
it, yeah.
IOPS.
Yeah, I forgot about that one. You know? Yeah, thanks. Yeah. How are Violin doing these days?
Well, they're back, aren't they? Well, they've been resuscitated off life support. I don't think they're necessarily back, but
still in hospital.
So, The reason I think this is an interesting one is because clearly there are vendors who are trying to change the market and bring new platforms to the market. So I'll give you some examples. Accelero, who are building out effectively a mesh of NVMe devices where you can have multiple servers and you can have them connected across a fast Ethernet network and use PCI Express as the effective connector and allow one node to talk to drives in another node without going through the processor of that node. So what it means is you can scale out your storage on that infrastructure very highly without necessarily taking a lot of overhead on those processors of the box you're trying to access. So theoretically, that should allow you to use that lost NVMe capacity, which could be quite significant.
It comes back to the point of what are you actually trying to achieve by it? The amount of these solutions like Accelero, you know, whether they're partnering with Micron or whoever they're partnering with, is they talk about the technical benefits and we can get the most IOPS and we can extract the most from the drives. It comes back down to what you're trying to achieve and how much money is it going to cost you and how it actually does it in the background. Yeah, there's going to be people that are going to be very, very interested in that and want to know it, but it still comes down to an economics argument, which is, you know, I hate to kick violin when they're down a little bit, but that's the point violin got wrong, is that we can provide a million IOPS. Well, how much does it cost? Well, about three times what you were paying for storage. Well, I don't need a million IOPS. Oh. That's it. If it's the same price, then maybe you've got an argument, but it's not.
I suppose the only argument is if we're often talking about today's workloads. If you look at tomorrow's workloads, then you might be able to see that these things actually have some utilization. I mean, things, well, let's go real buzzword bingo and go Internet of Things, where you've got millions of sensors all sending stuff back, and maybe, and you want to carry out real-time analytics on all these sensors and the logging data is coming back. Maybe then you start to get interested about how you actually get the full bandwidth or the full IOPS out of NVMe and other related drives.
That's exactly the point I was making about bandwidth. I actually had that use case in mind, whereas, you know, I've worked with a company that's doing a platform that is designed to have software from IoT firms on it, and it's all about the aggregation of the data and then the analytics. So it comes into the edge computing argument where you're sitting out there on the edge of the network, trawling vast amounts of data. That's a use case where you're going to need a unique architecture to solve the problem. But at the end of the day, it's got to be economical. And it does come down to the numbers. I get a little bit tired in this industry of people saying, you should buy our technology because it's cool. So,
oh, absolutely, yeah. Of course you should, yeah, because that's what everybody...
You two fall for that stuff more than me.
No. Do you know what, if I look back probably 25, 30 years ago, I might have said that, but, you know, nowadays I probably wouldn't as much, unless it was something really, like, cool, like a little the latest Raspberry Pi type device, or one of the other ones which I've got on my desk at the moment, which is an even smaller version of a Raspberry Pi, which is about half the size, so...
That didn't cost you $250,000.
Yeah, I've got a room full of this stuff, which I just randomly Kickstarter stuff. I see it's cheap and I'll have a go and Kickstarter stuff.
I have to agree. I know it's a diversion, but I agree. I've got one that's running an Intel chipset, which is supposed to run Windows 10 as well. And it's really funny because it's the only one that actually needs an external power supply, where does the rest run off USB. It shows you the difference in processing power, which gets us back to that whole point of, you know, these NVMe devices are incredibly powerful. And at some point, somebody's going to say, but I'm not getting the value out of these devices, even if we've moved to them, because the industry will stop doing SAS and will it stop doing SAS and SATA drives? Do we think that's likely to happen in the next 3 or 4 years?
If you get better performance for the same price, then yes. But the point being is that people won't be willing to pay for something they don't need.
Yeah, very true. I mean, if you look at your desktop PC, if you had a properly written file system, you could probably drive tens of thousands of IOPS through that. Nobody really needs it. But because it's the same price, nobody really cares.
Yeah.
And it's NTFS. Yeah.
Okay. There we go. There we go. Says the man that's had Mac problems all week.
Yes, I have had a few problems. and I did reinstall my machine. But it seems to be, and this goes back to the reason why we're recording in a slightly different way this time round, it does seem to be that a lot of the issues are not necessarily the platform. It seems to be the network that's the problem.
We should replace this and call this storage unMacked and get rid of your Mac.
Hold on a minute. That means I'll be fired as well.
In that case, I could use my little device then, and I could use that as my desktop going forward, because it's probably powerful enough to run it.
That probably worked better.
Okay, getting us back on track slightly. So we obviously we can talk about, say, Accelero, which is a very interesting architecture from that disaggregated side. I think Caminario were doing something similar, although that's been announced and we haven't fully seen the details. Martin and I did see a mock-up of what they were intending to do in the future. We saw that at a recent A3 event. And in fact, that was quite funny. I don't know whether we talked about this before, Martin, but we were looking at it thinking, this isn't a real demo, as in this is not a real demo. And it was a bit of software they were using, which allows you to create an environment environment which you can basically wireframe test what is going to be your user interface. So it looked really good.
Well, yeah, it's amusing if you don't have any technology behind it. The user interface looks wonderful, but does it do anything useful? Well, we don't know, do we?
Well, we don't know because it wasn't actually anything. It was literally just a user interface demonstration. I mean, it was interesting in that sense, but it wasn't real. Obviously, we're hoping to find out that that's going to be real going forward. But there are other architectures out there. I think Daytrim have done something similar where they've disaggregated the fast I/O from the capacity, and they've got like a shelf of disks that hold the capacity, and the performance is done in the server locally with flash. And it seems to be that, and we'll come back to this, something else in a second, but it does seem to be that a lot of these architectures are going down a server storage grouping, which looks a bit like HCI in some respects. It's sort of giving us that HCI-like feel to it, and HCI seems to be one of the popular ways to do this.
Isn't that purely because the biggest problem is now the interconnect? So in the past, the problem was the drives themselves. So storage companies were looking at novel ways to get more out of hard disk drives. We then shifted to flash, which meant that SAS was okay. It was good enough. But now we've gone to NVMe. SAS, quite frankly, isn't good enough. It introduces latency and introduces bandwidth restrictions and it introduces IOP loss. So therefore, need to look at a new interconnect. The first people to solve that were DSSD, you trying to use a proprietary interconnect method. And then people have realized, actually, PCI Express is bloody good. So look at ways that you can utilize the PCI Express bus. So essentially, you're collapsing the stack. You're just putting the storage directly onto the bus. Therefore, it looks, for all intents and purposes, like a HCI stack. Although it's not, because we haven't got the layer on top. But that's why you're seeing that. It's just that people are saying, well, we don't need a proprietary interconnect.
I was going to say, brings us on to your topic, disaggregation. We were talking about HCI. And we're thinking, so where do things like vSAN and things like that fall into this? And do we see a future for vSAN in a similar sort of use case? And how much could this be done in software? Gavin starts talking about a new interconnect, or what can we do there?
I reckon what it is, the storage admin is dead, Martin. That's what it is.
Yeah, he probably is. He doesn't care. He's become a virtualization admin.
Hey, he's finally admitted it!
Yeah.
vSAN is an interesting model because, on the one hand, I think there was a lot of potential negativity to it originally. And obviously, if you've seen the recent discussions that have gone on between Howard Marks and the Pure guys who wrote a report which tried to do some sort of TCO comparison with Nutanix, there's a bit of a sensitivity there that between traditional and the HCI model. Clearly, HCI has been attractive for people. People have adopted it. And it's been, vSAN seems to have been successful. I think they were talking about getting past 10,000 customers. I'm not sure whether it was that many. It's a reasonable number, but it's not anywhere near the number of people they've got as a customer base in general. But it seems to have been successful, and they've been able to put a lot of features into it, and they've spent, I think, a huge amount of money promoting it and marketing it. But it does seem to sort of have struck a chord with people.
Yeah, I think vSAN has. I mean, we're beginning to see more and more utilization. People starting to talk about it as their standardized tier for compute storage, if not necessarily bulk and data storage. So, in a virtual environment, you may keep all your operating systems and things on your vSAN, and then you look at other ways for storing what we like to think of persistence, like your database or something different.
Yeah, but going back to what Gavin was saying, obviously, the reason that that's successful there is because your storage is close to the compute, so you're not going out of the network other than to write replicas, which, as long as you've got a fast network, isn't too much of an issue. And that raises a question in general about architectures and that idea of closely coupling drives to the processor. And I guess if we look at, say, XIO, that's something I think in their new architecture they've tried to do, although I'm not the expert.
Yeah, well, neither am I, but I know them quite well. The XIO way to solving the problem is to look at that interconnect, is to say how can take advantage of, quite frankly, commodity off-the-shelf components, so they've not gone and done anything particularly proprietary in the drives or in the CPU, which is quite a change for them. But what they have done is built a fabric. So they've built essentially a PCI Express fabric that is designed all around getting the lowest latency. So if you're going to take advantage of drives that can provide microsecond latency and, you know, high amounts of IOP and bandwidth, how do you make sure you don't lose that? So a non-lossy switch, if that's a phrase, which has all been their design. What's interesting with the XIO one is it is just raw tin, is you then sit your own operating system on it. It may become a storage device in the future. They haven't quite decided that. But what they're doing is then going working with software companies who, quite frankly, have a need for that ultra low latency and that ultra high bandwidth performance, which is pretty niche, or niche if you're on that side of the pond. And for XIO, working in a niche market is not a problem for them because they don't need a huge amount of revenue to grow their operation. You can see why people like DSSD, and when they become EMC, moved away from that market because it's a little bit too niche for them and they need a high market. I think right now, Martin was saying earlier, it's specialist applications that have a need for this. In time, will it become general purpose? It's possible, but there may be a new technology out there that is more relevant and, more importantly, more cost effective.
So that's an interesting division between the different architectures. So I'm just going to try and summarize what we've been talking about in some respects. So on the one hand, you've got this move towards commodity hardware, which could be NVMe-based, could use PCIe interconnects, could use fast networks, and you can take the commodity components, say the physical hardware from, say, Micron, and put on Excelero software, which is a software sale, not a hardware sale, and then you get a fast storage device, or even a scale-out HCI-type solution.
Well, that's what they've done, isn't it? They've actually gone out and qualified that and tested it for people to make it easier.
Yeah, and then on the other hand, you've got XIO, who've done the, in effect, sort of the reverse, in the sense that they've done the hardware side of that, and then you can bring your own software to sit on top of it and decide how you want to do that, or at least not you personally, but OEMs would take that hardware and put some software on top of it.
That's exactly it. I think, yeah. You know, XIO are looking at whether to make it a dedicated storage platform, i.e. strip out some of the CPU, because they've got 88 cores in there. You don't need that for a storage box. And sell it as a storage device. They're being sensible and saying they're looking at the market need first. And they're not, you know, XIO, let's be honest, ever got a history of bringing out technology because it's cool and not because it's going to sell. They've learned and they're doing it around the other way now. But, you know, I think we've seen so far that people don't need an NVMe storage platform because you're solving a problem that doesn't exist. The problem exists elsewhere. It's usually on the interconnect.
I was going to say, I mean, so you talked about XIO, but there's other players who've probably gone through the same thought process as XIO as well. As you look at Symbolic IO, who started as a storage platform, and now they are really a general purpose compute platform, but they're doing funky things within the server to bring things closer to the CPU or make sure that they can fully utilize the bandwidth of memory and flash.
Yeah, agreed. So I think so far I would say in this market, you know, you could say Symbolic could be one, XIO could be one, E8 storage could be one, Datrim could be one, Excelero could be one, and then of course the probably the more specific vSAN ones could also be in that market too, especially the all-flash ones that are starting to use NVMe in their architectures. So it sounds to me like there is a certain degree of commonality there in terms of the way we're taking it forward. There's another one as well called Vexarta. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. They're not entirely out of stealth, but I think they're doing something similar too. Initially as a hardware appliance, but potentially, actually, it's more of a software sale, but they're initially doing a hardware appliance. So it sounds like lots of vendors are moving towards that architecture and to a certain degree disaggregating. We could even say Pure as well, where they're going to put in multiple shelves and the communication point between the shelves and the controller will be an NVMe.
Is that disaggregation though? I mean, well, to me, disaggregation is where you don't have to buy the shelf from the same people as the controller.
So let me say the reason why I'm saying that. And that's because when I had a chat with Ivan Iannacone, who's now over there as a product director, was at HPE, he and I were chatting about the fact that you can extend an array with shelves. And I said to him, well, that means surely any node can talk to any shelf because it's just a mesh of connectivity. He wouldn't be drawn on it, but it was pretty obvious that that is definitely an architecture where they could build a mesh of storage layers and controller layers and have them all talking to each other. And that could be an interesting architecture going forward, which they may or may not be doing. I've no idea. I'm just speculating.
Well, it would be interesting. Stops looking like a traditional dual controller array at that
Absolutely.
Point. And yeah, we can get excited about them.
Yeah, and it's and that means we can be excited about being technology instead of fixing a problem.
Yeah.
Touché.
Yeah, exactly.
Again, so, as long as it, but this is the point. I mean, the whole industry is littered with things that solve a problem, but are overpriced, or it solves too niche of a problem. That it's just, you know, who's going to buy it? Oh, Dave over there, and that's it. It's finding the next general purpose thing. You know, like you could argue the Symmetrix was, you know, brought to market to solve a problem. The good news is that it was, for them at the time, there was a hell of a lot of people with that problem and they were the only people that could do it. So that's why they could go off and have stupid stock prices.
Yeah, that is true. Okay, right. I think we should keep this one nice and short. I think that sort of covers it. I think it's an early stage, shall we say, in this part of the market. There's definitely a lot of new players that are trying to do something different with their architectures, and I think we need to be a bit further on before we see who's successful and who's not.
What would be good, I think, was to get a couple of the vendors who have differing viewpoints and get them on here. Maybe even put two on at the same time.
Absolutely. And I was about to say, I think that's probably the next step, because I think we've sort of set the scene, but without actually having any knowledge or understanding of the detail of exactly how these things are being implemented. So we should get somebody to come on who's an actual expert from these companies, and they can tell us what's going on.
And perhaps they can talk about the use cases and actually say where they're beginning to see some traction. That will be interesting.
Absolutely, and I think that more than anything else would be really interesting, because it would keep Gavin quiet. So one last point before we go. One vendor that you could class in this was Coho, in terms of that slightly different model, disaggregated model, shelves and SDN and talking to the storage across the network. Obviously, they didn't make it, so I think perhaps they may have been what you might call too niche.
Exactly. They solved a problem that not enough people had.
Yes, sadly. I think their technology was interesting, but clearly not interesting enough to get the traction that they really needed.
And storage companies shouldn't begin with the two letters CO, because Copan was a disaster as well.
Oh, that's harsh on Tahiti. Poor Patrick now is not going to come on and do one of our podcasts.
That is a bit harsh,
isn't it? Of course he will. He can tell us why it was excellent.
Okay, guys. All right. Well, let's call it a wrap, and we'll catch up with everybody next time. Thanks for listening, everybody, and join us again in another Storage Unpacked podcast. You can catch us online at storageunpacked.com, at Storage Unpacked on Twitter, and no, we don't know it. We still can't remember it, and we still haven't got enough followers to have a dedicated link on LinkedIn. It's still some random number, so we'll just keep it like that. Cheers, guys.